say my name until the city burns and the stars fade away and your scars don't hurt. I will hold you till the sun comes crashing down. I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Restored to More podcast, a listener-supported podcast that is dedicated to restoring marriages to wholeness in Christ after being affected by pornography and sexual brokenness.
After betraying Charity with pornography and unwanted sexual behavior, we had no idea how to rebuild our relationship or even if it was possible to restore what was broken.
Today, by God's grace, we have learned how to connect again, laugh again, and rebuild spiritual, emotional, and sexual intimacy to an even greater experience than before.
Our goal is that as you hear our story, the stories of others, and the knowledge needed to heal, you too can have a marriage that is becoming restored to more.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Update everyone. Course 1 registrations are back open. Whoop whoop. This is an 8-week course starting Thursday, September 14th that is designed to help you and your spouse start the journey to becoming restored to more. It will be led by R2M certified coaches, Cody and Michelle Larson. We will be focusing on how to cultivate safety and trust, healthy communication, deal with triggers, and begin to discover how God can use crisis to create closeness. You can see all the details on our website and can register today at www.restoredtomore.com/courses. Also, if you have appreciated this podcast, a great way to say thank you is leaving a 5-star rating and a positive review. These reviews help more people find the podcast and experience hope and healing.
Say my name until the city.
Everybody, welcome back to another recording and episode of Restored to More. We are so excited for you guys to hear our guest today, Stephanie Boersma. And Stephanie is a living example of how God brings beauty from ashes in the lives of his children. She's been married since 2010. I'm combining your husband with the year. That's hilarious.
I love it.
Been married since 2002 with her husband, Tim, and they have walked through the valley of marital betrayal and come out the other side stronger. They are more in love and fully devoted to Christ. She now heads up Reclaim Ministry, an organization that seeks to help other broken brides recover from the pain and devastation of marital infidelity. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, you're welcome. We are so excited to talk with you today. It's side note, it's been so fun just even talking with you a little bit out before the interview. I just feel like you're such a fun and easygoing person to talk to. And so I feel like this is just going to be such a fun interview. So we are excited to have you.
Yes, same here.
Well, Stephanie, why don't we just start with our audience getting to know you a little bit. Can you share with us a summary of your story and how you got to where you are at today using your pain for a greater purpose?
Yes. Well, I can give you like the 5-second nutshell, or I can extend it a little bit for you. So for the audience listening, I'll go a little bit over 5 seconds.
Perfect.
Here.
Sounds great.
Essentially, my husband and I, at the point of his confession, we had been married for 7 years. Mm-hmm. We were both born and raised in a small town, Christian families, Christian school. We did everything right. And up until that 7-year, confession, we never had major arguments. There was mm-hmm. never anything that stood out to me as any sort of red flags. We had 2 kids at that time. Our oldest was 4.5, and our son had just turned 1 year. And so, you know, I was kind of fighting that postpartum depression, and mm-hmm. I felt like there was something off, mm-hmm. but I just thought, oh, it's just a pregnancy. I'm just struggling, getting my feet back. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think or see this confession coming. Mm. And my husband sat me down. It started the night before. I had discovered a deleted email on his Facebook account. Mm. And that really is what triggered his confession. He kind of felt like, you know, she saw this. Now I have to tell her. Mm. And, you know, for some spouses who are walking in secret shame, and when they're involved with an affair or a pornography or sex addiction, they're waiting to be caught, mm. you know, because they're so stuck in that web of sin that they don't know how to get out. Yeah. And I think that was part of my husband's story. So I had found this email. I showed it to him, and immediately he was defensive. Like, he tried to say it wasn't anything, and there was nothing sexual about the email. It was just an exchange, a conversation exchange that was not okay, that it crossed the line. Mm. And so that next day he went to our pastor and said, I'm going to go home and I'm going to confess to my wife. And he did. He came home. And he sat me down on the couch, and he did confession really well. He had our kids removed from the home, so it was just him and I. And he had already informed our pastor and another mentor that, hey, I'm going to go do this, so get ready to catch my bride. Mm. And so he set up the confession well so that I could process all that he was going to share with me. And he confessed to a 10-year pornography addiction, which led to multiple affairs.
Wow.
And so, as you can imagine, I was pretty crashed. I was devastated. I was just 100% blindsided. Not for a second did I think the deleted email would lead to that.
Mm. Yeah,
and
course.
So that's really where our story started.
Wow.
And later that night, our pastor came home, and he helped my husband pack a bag, and he said, you need to go. And he did. He walked him to the door, and I came home to an empty home.
Wow.
And terrifying moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you guys set up a time where you were going to have a be separated for a time, or was there any conversation about that? Or was it just kind of like organically like, hey, I need some space, and he was willing to, and then he just went and stayed somewhere? How'd you guys work that out?
You know, nothing with God is organic. It's always planned, and it's always divine, and it's always perfect in his will. Yeah. And so our separation was not planned. It was not intended. I originally had told him, you have to stay in the basement for the kids. Like, you got to keep things normal for the kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that state of shock, you just say whatever.
Yeah.
And yeah,
that's
totally.
That's what came out of my mouth. And then our pastor had told me, you know, you need space to heal. You need space to process and to decompress and to grieve. And so that's really where we started that separation. We were only separated for 10 days. And this is the divine part, is that on day 10, it was Good Friday. And I think God knew something about my stubbornness. Maybe it's my Dutch heritage being stubborn, but God knew I was going to be wrestling with this. And all day, I just kept on reading the passages about the crucifixion. And I was so burdened by what God had done for me. And I was so willing to forgive everybody else, but I was not willing or quick to forgive my husband. And God and I that day just kept on going back and forth. Like, God, like, I want to accept the gift on the cross. I want to accept your grace and your forgiveness and the gift of salvation that you offer through the resurrection. But I just want to hang on to this one thing a little bit longer, because I feel like he needs to feel the weight of his confession. My husband needs to feel the weight of my pain. So if we can just go through this weekend, and if we can just do all the things and celebrate, you know, the resurrection 3 days later, that would be great. And of course, God was like, that's not how it works, my daughter. And so on day 10, Good Friday, I invited my husband back home, and we shared communion, and I gave him my forgiveness, and I thought I would feel so much better. And, you know, yes, our story started at the point of confession, but the true story started when I offered him my forgiveness. That's where God entered into my pain, and that's when God entered into the process and walked me through all of the really hard and ugly moments of purging the bitterness and the resentment and the anger and, yes, even the rage that I felt from his confession.
Wow. Did, you said your kids were one, and how old was the oldest?
She was 4 and a half.
So during that time of the 10 days, did you have to explain anything, like, you know, oh, you know, daddy's going
on a trip.
What did you say to the 4-year-old?
Yes. Our 1-year-old didn't notice anything, but, you know, obviously I was crying all the time. Mm-hmm. I wasn't eating. My mom stayed with me for that first weekend. Mm-hmm. And so it was not right. It was not well in our home. And I just kept on telling our daughter, you know what? Mommy has a friend that's sick and it just makes me really sad. Mm-hmm. And that was how I explained my tears. Mm-hmm. You know, usually my husband was gone before the kids got up in the morning. So that was not anything different. Okay. And then of course he was at work all day.
Yeah.
The nighttime routine is what we did differently. So mm-hmm. what we had arranged was that, we would do the driveway pass by. So he would pull up and he would do the dinner and he would put the kids to bed and oh, wow. we would literally pass each other in the driveway. Wow. So we didn't have to talk. We didn't have to brush shoulders. It was just a quick thing. And so that's what we did. And it worked for us. Yeah. It doesn't yeah. work for others. And, you know, for any bride that's listening, every story is unique to them.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, much like we have our own DNA, so does your marriage. Mm. And your marriage is going to need different things than what our marriage needed. And so how we did our separation worked for us, but mm-hmm. it may not work for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's one important thing for anybody listening. And you guys can attest to this as well, is that, you know, everybody's journey is going to be slightly different.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we totally agree with that 100% that there isn't a one size fits all. There's not a pretty equation of how to handle betrayal and the trauma and the restoration within a couple. And everyone's journey looks different. What we do know is that our God is the God of restoration, and he intends for people to do what you said, and that's to pursue him in the midst of the pain that you're going through. And that's what you did. You know, you had these hard conversations with Jesus, and you... And I think what I wanted to say back to what you were saying, your story, is I want to just talk about how normal that is, how normal it is. Mm-hmm. And Cher has talked to us with me, and that is that, you know, she at times was holding on to the lack of forgiveness because she just wanted me to feel the pain. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that that's like totally wrong to do, because there is a sense of like, I want to take this in my own hands. And not that it's not wrong, but it's not abnormal. It doesn't mean you're a bad person because you want your husband to feel the pain of what he's done. I think that's normal. Is it is it right? I'm not going to answer that question, but is it normal? Yes, right? To go, I want to take this in my own hands, and I don't think there's anything abnormal about that emotion and that desire to do that for sure.
I totally agree, Clinton. I think where the line is drawn, though, is if you're hanging on to that pain and that bitterness, and then that results with you stepping out of God's plan and God's will. Like if your integrity is in question because of how you're processing your grief, then I would take a step back and say, whoa, what is going on here? Mm. Because, you know, I've met with so many brides who have had retaliation affairs. Mm-hmm. That's not how you deal with this.
Yes.
You know, I've met with brides who have physically harmed their spouse. Mm. No, that's not what God says. Like, yes, we can have righteous anger for what our spouse has done to us. Yes, you have permission to grieve. You have permission to be angry. You have permission to be totally, completely distraught for what is lost. Mm. But you don't have permission to go outside of God's will. Mm. And what he commands us to do. And so I think that's where the line is. Yes, you can be angry, but how long are you going to be angry for?
Yeah.
You know, 4 years out, I think I would probably question why you're still waking up every day. Like, you just received this confession the night before. Like, that's where you start to question, you know, the grace and the integrity and the forgiveness. Because forgiveness doesn't say we're going to forgive and we're going to hang on to that and remind somebody every day for the next 4 or 5 years. What they did to us. So
couldn't agree more. I just wanted a female's voice to say that. So that was great. That's exactly what I was hoping was going to happen right there. And that was fantastic. Cause I don't think I can necessarily say anything about that.
So true.
I gotta know my place.
The
on
girls
this thing,
are
you
like,
know?
You better not be the one to answer this.
Yeah.
but then when they hear Stephanie, they're like,
they're like, oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. one thing I want to say about this is good. We're just hanging on this topic a little bit, but, and then, and on top of that, for the males, it's not our place to correct our wives in that moment, right? I just think that's important to say that, you know, and there were times where, you know, I got kicked out because I had relapsed in our relationship and charity needed space. And as much as I knew what you explained was happening, I knew Charity was at a place where she was angry and she was mad and she put our little kid on the phone, and she'll admit that it was, she put him on the phone so that I would feel more pain because I wasn't there. And she said, let me just put our oldest on the phone so daddy just drives the nail right through his skull, you know, and it made me so sad, and it did serve their purpose. And she, I don't need to talk for you, but she'll admit that wasn't right.
Yeah.
But it's not my place to say, Charity, you're outside of God's laws here, and this isn't how, that's just not my place. My place, I think, is as the man and the men that are listening, is to pray for our wives and to pursue sound counsel and to say, is this right? And to have people go, no, it's not right what she's doing, but it's not your place to fix her and correct her. It's your place to pray for her and do and work your own program and not let those moments justify relapsing or a continued addiction just because she's not acting the right way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to be completely honest with you, when my husband meets with other men, and even in those beginning months, when I would ask the really awkward questions and just keep on reliving and processing, there was one man that shared a line with him that really stuck with him, and now he shares it with other men, and it's, who the hell are you? Who the hell are you to tell your wife?
Yeah, it's true.
When to process.
So true. No, you can say that on this podcast. And it's very true.
It is. Like, you created this dynamic. You created this situation. So who the hell are you to tell your bride she's cried enough. She shed enough tears. You know, who the hell are you to say, you know what, we've talked this question over and over. I don't think you need any more details. Or, you know, we've done enough books. We've done enough devotions, counseling, podcasts. I think we're done now. Like, no.
You're right.
You're right.
Chair's over here going, amen. Come on, sister. You know?
so good. It's so funny because, like, right before you said, like, oh, yeah, my husband said something, I, like, took out the pen because I always like to take notes, and I, like, wrote. And then when you said that, I was like, oh, that's amazing. I still wrote it down, but I was expecting, like, you know, just, like, oh, this profound, like, he says, you know, blah, blah, and what you just said was still so profound, though, because sometimes what we do is when we promote the podcast, I'll, you know, have a picture of you, and then I'll have a quote of, like, something that was so profound, and I was thinking, like, maybe this is the one.
We won't put that one on, just so you know. That won't be your Instagram post. Who the hell are you?
Thank you. I appreciate that. But you know what? The reality is that somebody needs to hear that.
Oh, yes. You know? Yes.
And it goes both ways. Like, I can't be the person to always be bringing this back up. I mean, we're 11 years post-confession. If I were to be bringing these awkward questions up every single day to my husband, I think he would have a right to say, who the hell are you to be reminding me of this?
Yeah.
God doesn't work that way, right? Yeah. Like, that's part of the forgiveness. We aren't to forget, because I think the moment you forget is the moment you slip back up, the moment you go back to your old patterns. But we're not to remind people of the pain that they've caused us every single day for decades more, you know?
So true. I think it's just reminding ourselves, like, what role do we play, you know? Because, and it's just reminding ourselves that we are not God, you know? God is the one who, you know, forgives us. And that is how we are going to, you know, start healing and being open to even forgiving our spouses by plugging into God's forgiveness and realizing that he's the one who has forgiven us. And that is how he's going to give us the grace and the sufficient power to be able to forgive our husbands and vice versa. Like, when, you know, if Clinton were to say, you know, who the hell are you? And, you know, asking me all these questions, it's like, well, be reminded, you know, at the same time that is not his role to be, you know, approaching me like that. And that's why I just believe the spiritual component of healing in this is so crucial, because he is your middleman. Like, he is going to be the one to reveal things to you. He is going to be the one to convict you of things. He's going to give you the perspective that our spouse, we will not be able to hear it from our spouse. That's not our role.
I'd love to hear that take from you, Stephanie. You know, what did that look like for maybe you individually and then you as a couple? you know, what did the walk with Christ look like in the beginning season of, yes, you know, you explained, you know, the part where you definitely felt led by God to forgive your husband, welcome back in. But we also know that forgiveness is a process. It's it's a one-time decision and it's a process. Mm. And so what did that look like for you and just that quiet time with the Lord and all of those things during that first season?
You know, just picking one topic from that question, forgiveness.
Yeah, sorry about that. No, that was it. I was like, geez, I just shotgunned her with like 10 questions in one question. So go ahead. Pick whichever one you like.
Yes, here we go. I think forgiveness is something that we all wrestle with daily. It's something everybody dances with. And, you know, forgiveness really is everything in our stories. Mm-hmm. It is the point where we go from sitting in our bitterness and becoming partners with that the opposite of forgiveness is ugly. It's that person who is always a Debbie Downer, that negative Nelly, who's just taking people down with her words and nothing is ever good enough. And they're resentful, their bitterness, they're just, everything about them is ugly. Mm. And so forgiveness is that connection point where we can go from that ugly person to the one who's pursuing healing. It's the bridge to healing, you know, and it's not the same as reconciling. And forgiveness does not equal trust. What forgiveness does is you're saying to God, I'm giving you this person. I'm giving you my pain. Mm. I'm giving you the betrayal, the affair partners, the addiction that was, you know, part of our entire existence as a couple. I'm giving this back to you, God, because it's too messy and it's too hard for me to play judge. Mm. And I don't want to have to be the one to create a punishment for this. Mm. And I'm going to offer it to you so that you can then in turn begin that healing process in me. And that really, you know, that was the starting point of my story. It was when on that Good Friday, I told Tim I forgave him. And that doesn't mean that I put all of my pain aside. That doesn't mean I stopped crying or I stopped hurting. No, it actually got worse because God was then taking that bitterness. He took that scab off and I was able to flush out my wounds with the partnership of the Holy Spirit and through wise counsel and daily accountability and mentorship. That was something that I had to partner with every day. And I did. I mean, there was days where I would call Tim and, hon, I just need to tell you, I need to verbally tell you that I forgive you. I would send him an email, a text message, and just tell him, like, I forgive you. Because I had to remind myself that was the narrative I chose. This was the choice that I was going to make, was I was going to choose to forgive him so that God could then heal me. Because if not, I was going to be that bitter bride for the rest of my life. And I'd seen too many people in my, you know, close circles that were those people. And I didn't want to be that person. I did not want it. And plus, when you're bitter, you are no fun to be around, even just to be around yourself. Mm. It's not fun. You don't see the blessings. You don't see the joy. You're a much harsher parent towards your children. Mm. Like, nothing works when forgiveness is not part of that daily walk with Christ. And so, forgiving my husband, it didn't make him right, but it set me free. Mm. It gave me the freedom I needed to start healing.
So good. So powerful. You had talked about a little bit earlier about how when you guys sat down and you had told him that you forgived him, it kind of then, that's when all the feelings and emotions kind of hit you. Can you kind of talk about how, you know, you guys are in very different places, how he, you know, after he shares with you everything, he is feeling a sense of freedom. And then how,
sure, even like relief.
Yeah.
You know, all those things. Yeah.
And then you are at a completely different place, emotionally, and how that's just kind of normal.
Yeah. You know, for my husband, 6 months before confession, he had his come to Jesus moment where his business partner in his office turned around and said, dude, we've got one chance in this life or we burn in hell. Mm. And for whatever reason, God on that day had Tim's heart in his hand. And Tim went outside his office and fell to his knees and just said, God, I can't do this anymore. Just take it. Oh. And his addiction to pornography, his need to pursue one night stands, it was completely gone. Yeah. Was there temptation? Absolutely. But the need to pursue that lifestyle was gone. And so for 6 months prior to confession, I had started to notice changes in him. Just more engaged with the family, more present. Mm. He was the one initiating the bedtime prayers. I wasn't forcing him to pray. There was more of a spiritual leadership component to his personality versus me forcing it out of him. Mm. And it wasn't just me that noticed the change. It was other people as well. And so I had that going into confession. Mm. I had this little hint of something's different going into it.
Yeah.
But what Tim did for those 6 months was trying to find a scripture verse that said, God, I can give it to you. I can release my sins. I can ask you for forgiveness. But do I really have to tell my wife?
Yeah.
And there's no scripture verse that says that. And so, you know, that was his struggle. And so when he finally did confess, it was that final straw, that final talon that the enemy had in him that was released. And so after he confessed, he wept for joy. And I'll tell you what, guys, it pissed me off.
Of course.
Because he was free.
Yes.
He just took the secret sin that he had been living with for 10 years and it was gone.
Mm.
The final piece of him releasing it to God was gone. He had done his job of saying, God, take it. I confessed. I've shared my secret. It's out in the open. It's in the light. But what it did to me is that he took all those 10 years and he just dumped them in my lap. And so for him, yes, there was shame. There was the fear of, I know my bride and I know her stance on this. And I'm pretty certain that she's going to divorce me and she's never going to want to speak to me again. So for him, yeah, shame, guilt, fear, there was all of that. There was so much emotion and joy. But for me, I went into, it's kind of like that car accident you encounter. I've never been in one, but I'm just speaking from other people's experiences. That car accident where you go into shock and you don't realize that you have blood dripping down your forehead or you have a broken arm because you just went through something traumatic and your body is in shock and you've not yet felt that pain.
Yes.
The reality has not quite set in. And that's where I was in the moment of confession.
Yeah.
Yes.
I put my walking shoes on. I put my running shoes on. I went in the kitchen and I said, you have to stay here for the kids. And I got the keys. I went to church. And it was once I got to church, the shock immediately started to wear off. Mm. And that's where the confession started to sink in. And I realized my husband just confessed to me. He's been with other women. Mm. My husband has looked at other women. My husband has slept with other women. Mm. Oh my goodness, I'm that wife that was cheated on. And so for me, that's where all of that, the difference right after confession. Mm. I think you have somebody who most men are discovered. Honestly, most men do not come forward with a confession. So most men have the tail between the legs and they're like, oh my goodness, how can I save myself? How can I salvage my pride in this moment? And so there's a little bit of defensiveness and then they realize like she knows too much. I can't, like, here it is. Here's everything. And I think that was the difference between Tim and a lot of other men that we mentor and walk through this journey with, is that he chose a repentant healing journey. He chose a lifestyle of repentance after confession. And so many individuals don't. And so that broken bride who now has the trauma sitting in her lap and the confession and the weight of the reality that her marriage may be destroyed and be ending, she doesn't have that repentant husband across the table.
Mm.
And so every marriage is different and every confession, every discovery is going to have different emotions and different feelings. But, you know, for me, I was embarrassed for what my husband just told me. I was angry. Honestly, I didn't yell at him. I didn't cuss at him. I didn't hit him. I just sat there really quite calm. That's only by the grace of God that I sat there so calm and I took in that confession. And then the fact that our pastor stepped in and said, you need space. Like, you're in shock. This is trauma. You need space to process and to heal. And I don't know if I fully came out of that shock for a few days. It really took quite a few days for everything to sink in.
It sounds like you guys had a pretty close relationship within the church. Is that correct? Or did you guys just like after this happened? That's pretty amazing.
Yes. You know, we were engaged in the church. Our kids were active in the church. We went to Sunday church services, and I'm a worshiper, so I love the worship. But were our hearts completely committed? I would say yes, mine was. Just because of, you know, I think whenever there's a catalyst in our life that causes us to fear an outcome, or a catalyst that drives us closer to God to say, like, please, God, I need you. I need your help now. Mm-hmm. I had enough of those moments in my life that I felt close to God. But it really, my faith really came alive after this. Mm-hmm. And same for Tim. So we were like the perfect Sunday Christians. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, our relationship and our involvement with the church became so much more. Mm-hmm. But our pastor, we had a good relationship with our pastor. We weren't super close. I think the fact that Tim went to him that earlier that day and said, I'm going home to confess, you need to get ready to catch my bride. Mm-hmm. I think there was a little bit more investment into our story that way. And actually, it was those two pastors, our pastor and his wife, that walked with us every day and still do. They still check in on us. And our church has been an absolute blessing for our marriage, because we never had the typical confession or discovery. You go to marital counseling, you do the books, you do all the things, you check off all the boxes. Like, we had daily accountability and mentorship, and that's unheard of. We are forever grateful.
That is incredible. That, I mean, that is just the epitome of what I feel like church is there for. You know, that is that was why church is there, is to be there when we're falling and when we're broken, and just to step into the gaps of that, because that shows Christ, you know. And that is absolutely amazing that they came in like that and were your support system. They were the ones who told you that you needed to grieve the death of your marriage, correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little about that?
Absolutely. You know, grief is so ugly and it's so hard. You know, before this, I would have thought, like, I would have put grief in the box of somebody died. Yep. That's where you grieve.
Yeah.
Any other grief does not belong in there, because you only grieve when you lose somebody.
Yeah.
And so that night, our pastor did share with me, you need to grieve for your marriage. You need to grieve over what was, what is, what could have been. You need to grieve over the death of your marriage. And that gave me permission to let even more tears fall. And it gave me permission to grieve the loss of our dreams and the ambitions that I had for our marriage, for the ideas that I thought would be our marriage, all those things. And I like to refer to it as our first marriage, and we're now in our second marriage, because really what was in our first marriage, I don't ever want to experience again.
Yes.
There was good stuff. I don't want to forget the memories. I don't want to forget some of those intimate moments that we shared together. I don't want to forget the trips. Those were good, but I don't want the patterns and the habits that we had established to be in our now new marriage.
Yes.
And so the grief was a process. I think as grief and forgiveness kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
You know, C.S. Lewis, he says, and no one ever told me about the laziness of grief. And I got to tell you, like, there was so much exhaustion and fatigue over this process of grieving for my marriage. Simply because my marriage had died. And that took so much of my physical presence to process. You know, that first night, I took a shower, and I just, like, that confession and the ideas and the images. And at that point, I didn't know a ton of details. I knew what had happened, but I didn't know the nitty-gritty details. But it was enough that I felt so dirty and so filthy from just the knowledge of what my husband had done. I took a shower just trying to wash everything off, right? Like, if I can just wash this confession off, I can wake up tomorrow and it's going to be just like normal and it's going to be fine. And by the time I stepped out of that shower, my arms, I had, the water was so hot. I had like nearly burned my arms and scrubbed them raw. Wow. And that's grief. You know, that was me grieving for my husband to realize that, you know, my husband had an illness and I couldn't fix him. His illness was this addiction. And I first off didn't even realize he was sick. So then I felt ashamed for that. I felt grieved for not even knowing my husband enough to know that this was even present in our marriage. And I think this is where a lot of women get stuck. You know, I often tell women that the moment your movement forward and your faith are flatlined, you're already stuck. And as much as it hurts, focusing on one step a day will eventually lead to you being able to walk a mile. And so even in that grief, you still have to lace up your shoes. You still have to get up and get out of bed. You still have to brush your teeth and have some nutrition. I didn't eat for 10 days, but my mom forced water down me. But you have to at least move forward in your grief. You know, when my sister passed away, I was stuck. I think when you do lose somebody in a death grief, it is hard to move forward, but you still have to. You have to honor them in that. And same with this type of marital grief. You still have to move forward. There's children in your home that are dependent on you. Your friends, your family, your society, your work, you still have to get up. And that's hard when you've got the laziness of grief, because what you really want to do as a human is just curl up in the fetal position in bed and just cry all day long. And so that becomes the battle.
I couldn't agree more. And I think a lot of people don't talk about grief. And so when you're experiencing it, you just feel so weird. You're like, are these feelings normal? Are these emotions normal? And you're exhausted. And it's such a different exhaustion that you are like, why am I tired? Like, I shouldn't be tired, right? Anybody who looked at me would be like, why are you tired? You haven't done anything today. And you're like, you're right. I got out of bed and I made my kids breakfast and I'm already exhausted. And you start to think like, what's wrong with me?
I think the grieving period a lot of times can be, you know, a lot of people will categorize it as depression. And there is room for obviously people to be diagnosed with depression. And I'm not saying that that's not a very real thing. And I think even that can be a phase of grief. But but understanding what grief really is, unfortunately, our culture does a horrible job at educating people about grief. I mean, I think if I'm correct, that you are the average person in California is 2 days off of work, potentially 4 days off of work, if they were to lose somebody like their parents or a son or a child, things like that. Even a immediate family member is like, I think it's like 4 to 5 days. So you think about, that's pretty insane.
That's awful.
Isn't that horrible?
Terrible. And terrible.
It is.
And our world expects people to get right back in the swing of things. And so what you're saying is, and Chair and I talk a lot about grieving as well, because there's a lot of different things that, in our opinion, have to be grieved in this process. Even as, even for the men, my story is a little bit different, where I kind of envy the guys who had it taken away right away, but I'm also praising God for those things, that God can do that as well. But there was a grieving period of the addiction, of even learning how to how to grieve the addiction loss, which sounds kind of like totally weird. Sick and twisted and weird. Like, why do you grieve the loss of pornography in your life? But when that becomes, you know, your best friend and all that you know and your comfort and your zone of acceptance, you know, you have to grieve in our experience. You have to grieve, like you said, the loss of a marriage. You have to grieve in the addicted state. There's also a grieving of what caused the addiction to take root in a person's heart, the grieving of what was supposed to be maybe in a family unit or the relationship with God. There's a grieving period of what I thought God was. God's bigger than the box that I put him in. And he does even allow things to happen that I don't understand. And I have to grieve that. So there's a lot of things that you're hitting on that I just think about, you know, this is a deep topic and one we could go into for a long time, but it's so important that people really take time to just be. And that's what I hear you saying.
Yes.
Because yes, there are responsibilities we have to do. And at the same time, we need to open up moments in that day to just be present with our feelings yep. and not stuff them down and not neglect them, but also not neglect responsibilities. It's really is mm-hmm. a balance of those things is what I hear you saying.
It is. And you know, a lot of times the broken bride is so angry with her spouse because they too are grieving, you know?
Yes.
Yes. Much like you, like you had to grieve this best friend, and we don't want to see pornography or any sort of sexual addiction as a best friend, but it was, that yeah. was your coping mechanism yeah. for so many years. And that became somebody that you could rely on and who you could trust, yeah. you know, trust on. And it's, for some men, it's an affair partner. It's an emotional affair. It's a mm-hmm. physical affair. And they have to grieve the loss of that relationship, as messed up and twisted as that is.
Yes.
There's grieving on both sides.
Yes.
So, yeah, this is something that is, this is a podcast of its own.
It is.
So true. So yes. true.
Yeah.
What did, yes. what kind of self-care did you implement? You know, because I think what goes hand in hand is, yes, you have grief and you have all these emotions and we need to sit in them and be still. Yet at the same time, we also need to get back up and be able to, you know, get ourselves back to health and healing. And an aspect of that is some self-care. What kind of self-care did you implement?
You know, this is very practical. I had three essentials that cool. I yes, three essentials. That was it. That's what I wanted to get done for that first year. It was to brush the fur off my teeth. It was to slap a little pit stick on, put a little deodorant on, and it was to put a bra on. That was it. If I could get those three things done in a day, then I was like, oh, pat on the back. Yes. I am having a great day.
Yes.
But as time moves on, you know, self-care looks different for yes. everybody. So I really encourage brides, find those three essentials, establish them, locate them, acknowledge what you need in each day to move forward. And those are basic. There's physical essentials, there's spiritual essentials. Mm-hmm. And so I took the time to be in the Word. I took the time to worship. I took the time to pray. Those would be the spiritual physical or the spiritual essentials, my physical self-care essentials. Mm. You know, I kind of was a recluse. I really turned inward because I was so embarrassed of her story that I didn't want a lot of people to know. And so we kept our circle really small. But we also had to alter all our social circles. So things that we used to do, we had to change because we were striving for reconciliation. We were striving for that restored marriage. And some things just didn't fit into that equation anymore. Mm. And so I would have the babysitters come just so I could go for a run or go for a walk or sit in my car and listen to worship music. Self-care looks different for everybody, but it has to be very practical. So I encourage women to make a list. Like, you have to have at least an hour a week of self-care, whether that's a family member babysitting the kids or whether that's, I mean, I hate to encourage retail therapy, but sometimes that does help.
Totally.
Yes. But something, whether you're window shopping or yes. if it's, you know, self-care, and that means grocery shopping with nobody else, then do that. But you have to be proactive about scheduling the time for yourself. Mm. And if that means having a babysitter come over so you can take a nap because you're not sleeping at night because the nightmares of everything are keeping you up, then do it. Mm. You know, it's what you invest in that first year after a discovery of betrayal in your marriage is going to set the tone for your healing. And if you invest in all things retail therapy and you do nothing for the heart condition, if you do nothing for the soul, you're going to be in a lot worse condition in a year from now than you are if you were to set those things and get those patterns, those habits of, you know, taking the quiet time, getting up an hour earlier so you could just sit in peace and quiet, you know, having the meals arranged so that you don't have to have that frantic hour before the dinner time, you know, get food prep doing that. That is self-care in my mind.
Yep.
It's making your life easier so that you have more time to focus on healing and less time to do the mundane, you know, in and out kind of details for the day.
So true. I love that. And it's not, you know, for me, at least in our story, like self-care was not easy for me to implement. And it was not easy for me to admit because it was like, hey, I need something, you know, I need, you know, to go on a run, or I need, because it's prioritizing you. And when you have littles and everything, life is crazy. Life gets busy, and it is not easy to set aside, you know, which sounds so sad, but in that time I was not prioritizing me. And it was difficult to do that, but I love how simple you made it in the beginning with like, you're like three essentials. it was the bra and some deodorant and brushing my teeth. And it
can just, done. The work is good. I can sit for the rest of the day.
but it can start like that, you know? And I think if women can even just start with that, then it gives them a foundation to be able to build upon, and then they'll be able to expand more areas for self-care.
I think too, it's so important. You know, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that this has to be a very fluid process as well. Yeah. Like my essentials that first year look totally different than what my essentials do now. And so as you heal, as there's more recovery in place, those things that you need are going to look different, and you need to give yourself permission to allow those essentials to change and to kind of ebb and flow as the healing journey is going. For some women, it starts in separation and it ends in divorce. So the amount of time they have for self-care is going to look greatly different than somebody who's in a process, you know, restoring a marriage, living with a repentant husband who can stay home and give you that quiet time. So you have to have a lot of grace for this process and permission to realize, like, okay, what worked those first 2 weeks is going to be different the next 2 months.
Yes.
So good. I just want to add, for the guys that are listening, it's really important that we open this space for our wives, that we understand they're going through the grieving period. And, you know, if those are the three things that are essential, like you said, for our wives, I think the issue is that we don't communicate the proper expectations of what we each are going through. And that's really what we're so excited to talk about all the time, is how, you know, us guys work in our program is great. It's essential to recovery and restoration in a marriage, but it's also opening that space and not expecting our wives, hey, if we eat takeout for 6 months while she doesn't cook meals, great. You know, if we can learn how to, you know, make macaroni and cheese, even better, you know, but realizing, hey, I'm going to release you from the expectation that from all you were doing before to give you that space to grieve and to open that up is so important for us guys to do that. I would just want to add that to it. So one thing, Stephen, I'd love you to talk about is, you know, Reclaimed Ministry. This is so cool. How I love what you said off air. And that is, you know, when you have a story of redemption, it's too good not to share. Like, and that's what you, and that's, it's so evident of all that you guys are working on. It's awesome. And I'd love for you to talk about that, you know, come alongside people. And what does that look like today for you with Reclaimed Ministry?
Yeah. You know, this was never my dream. This was never on my bucket list to run a ministry or to write a book. And actually, to be quite honest with you, I hated English class in high school. Like, so please forgive me if you see some grammar edits that need to be done. Like, it's just one of those things where, like, this was never my plan. My plan, my dream was to be a hairstylist and to have a family in the white picket fence.
Wow.
And I think when God enters into your story and says, oh, wait a minute, but I forgot to tell you, I have a different purpose and plan for your life. And that's kind of what happened, is God just interjected and was like, oh, hang on, push pause. I'm going to prepare you for something, because I'm going to give you a story. And in a couple years, after you've had enough time to heal, I want you then to go to a national platform and to share with people, because you are the voice of hope and you are the voice of encouragement and mercy that women need to hear. Wow. And there's some days where I still struggle with that. There's some days where I'm like, why? Like, I don't want this. But this has been my thing, is, you know, if there was ever a purpose behind Reclaimed Ministry, it's never to reach the masses. It's to reach that one bride. Mm. It's to reach that one individual that needs to hear this podcast today. And it's not about the numbers. It's not about the platform. It's not about how many books we sell or followers we have. It's about being able to speak to the heart of that one individual who just needs a little something extra. Wow. To be told that you have worth, mm. and you are enough, and you matter. Your voice matters. I need your opinion. I need your perspective. You are important, mm. and you are a beautiful, cherished daughter. Mm. You've been given this life because you're a child of God. You are mine. Mm. And if I can get that message to one person every day, then the purpose of Reclaimed Ministry has been walked out.
Wow.
It's not about anything else. You know, ministry, there's no money in ministry.
Yeah.
But it's moments like that where I can find that one person that go, okay, this is why I'm doing it. This is why I'm sharing.
Yeah.
And when I receive the messages and the emails and the phone calls from women saying, you know, thank you for this, thank you for that, and you've changed the perspective on this journey, and I'm in front of divorce papers, but I know that God has me and God is for me. And I just want to say thank you for that. Then it's worth it. Mm. Then sharing and the, you know, sometimes humiliation and the repetitiveness of sharing your story, it becomes worth it when that one person can take one more step forward, knowing that, you know what, God's got her.
Mm. Wow. Thank you.
Amen. That was powerful. I think everyone listening to that felt the Holy Spirit through your words. You know, we were online looking at your website, which is reclaimedministry.com. And, you know, I love the steps you have on there. You know, purchase the devotional, get plugged into community, work through it, experience the wholeness. And I love that plan. I want people to know about that. They're listening to this right now. They can go to the website, and it's what you're focused on, I think, is so important, because we believe there's many components to the restoration process. It's not just see a therapist. It's not just have a coach. It's not just read a book. It's really the community. And what it sounds like, from what we've gathered, what you're focused on is walking with people going through the season of brokenness. Mm. And I think that is so important. Can you just talk to us about, you know, your vision for that and how you physically, tangibly walk with people that are going through the journey?
Yeah. So there's a couple ways that we get involved with brides and mentor them and encourage them. You know, the one is just through the social media. You know, you can follow us on Instagram. We have a Facebook page, but we also have something that it's just super close to my heart. It's the Reclaimed Ministry community, and this is on Facebook. This is for women only. Clinton, sorry, you're out.
You can't use my login, okay, buddy?
No, no way. No thanks.
Not at all.
No thanks. I don't think I'd want to.
This is a community of women with similar betrayal stories. So women who have experienced pornography or sexual addictions present in their marriage, women who have walked through emotional or physical affairs, and the pain and the turmoil that comes out of that. We have women who have been divorced for 30 plus years, women who are just 2 weeks out from their discovery day. All different stories, all different circumstances, but we are there together to support and encourage and to pray for one another. And I dug my heels in doing this for far too long, because part of my fear was, I don't want to be on social media. Because that was kind of where it started.
Yes.
And we started this in April of 2019. All of our social media accounts, we started in April of 2019. And it immediately took off. And these women, yes, we're about 800 women strong in this private group. But you know what? It is every day I'm brought to tears reading these conversations of women supporting each other in their own brokenness. Like, women who are completely shattered and devastated are offering encouragement and hope to other people. And that is the body of Christ.
Yes.
That is Jesus in action. That is faith being shared with other people. And so that is one way that we come alongside brides, is through offering the hope and just the encouragement through our social media platforms. But I also lead small groups, Reclaim small groups, in person. We also do Zoom small groups with all things COVID. We needed to branch out into more of an online platform. And so we do have ways to connect. There are small groups across the country. So women can email me, Stephanie@reclaimedministry.com, and they can ask if there's a small group near them.
Cool.
But yeah, and then obviously getting the book and helping them process that journey, the 30-day journey together. And that really is how we come alongside women. You know, I love sitting across the table from a bride and being able to hear her story. And that really is, that's my heart. Like, I love to be face-to-face with women. And if I could do that with each bride that contacts me, oh, I'd be drinking coffee for days, but I would love it.
Wow. Thank you so much for all the work that you are doing and just talking about a dark subject, but bringing it to light. And you guys are using the epitome of finding purpose from pain. And believe that when we do that, God just opens up doors and he just pours out his blessings because he loves this. He loves restoring people. That's what he does. You know, he redeems people, he reclaims them, and he can totally rewrite our story into something just so beautiful. So thank you so much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie, for being on the Restored to More podcast. We are so thankful you took the time today to do that. And we know that our listeners gained a lot of value from hearing the wisdom and insight you shared today. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me as a guest.
Is there any last thing that you wanted to share with the audience before we headed out?
Yeah, you know, we have something really exciting that we're about to announce. We have been asked for years now to have ministry merchandise, you know, that good old-fashioned swag.
I love it.
And yes, and so we were about to launch something new with some ministry swag gifts.
Cool.
And the most beautiful part about this is that all of the profits will go back into blessing the brides that we mentor. So all the profits made will go into providing counseling for brides, scholarships to attend different retreats. You know, if they need help with rent, we come alongside them for the practical needs.
Wow.
If it's just a coffee card to say, go have some self-care and grab yourself a hot coffee. Mm. So all the profits will go back to blessing these brides. And that's the most beautiful thing, is that it's not, again, it's not about the money. It's about encouraging these people as they go through this journey and to wholeness, really.
Wow.
So that is something super exciting. So follow us along, you know, on social media, follow along. And once we release it, you will know for sure, but it's all things pretty. It's earrings and bracelets and necklaces and stickers. It's super fun. Really excited about it.
That is awesome. How fun. And I love that I feel like it's just going to be a beautiful reminder, you know, and when you can wear something like that, it's just, I love that because it's a reminder of where you've been and your story. And it can be something just so beautiful. That is so cool that you guys are doing that.
I love that. Fashion with a purpose. I dig it.
Absolutely.
I dig it. Love that, Stephanie. Well, thank you so much again for being here. We have really enjoyed our time. Thank you so much.
Yes.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for the upcoming course. You can also connect with us on the Ask Us Anything page at restoredtomore.com. Also, quick note, all the work at Restored to More Inc., including this podcast, is made possible by our donors and financial partners. We wouldn't be here without those who have generously given to the cause of restoration. If you ever feel led to give, you can do so on the donate page on our website,